Kapoor Dhamma Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai, Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda.
Oh, glories to the assembled devotees. Oh, glories to the assembled devotees. Oh, glories to the assembled devotees. Oh, glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishnaya Vajraya Shrimate Bhakti Vinayata Swami Nitya Namne. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Vara Vana Pachamaya Vajra Sarasa Samadhyaya Vaskar Chandra Sitaya Vande Nama Sri Guru Sri Tata Kaya Sri Vimini Vaishnavascha Sri Rupam Sambhu Jantaya Sambhana. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's March 5th, April 5th, 2009 in Auckland, and we're doing Upadeshamrita text 7 and 8. So if you have a book, you can say the Sanskrit and English together. So. Syat Krishna nama charitadi sitapya vidya pito patapya rasanastya narochichanu kintra varada nudinam kalu saiva justar Svadvi kramad bhavatitad gadam lahantri. The holy name, character, pastimes, and activities. We can say it all together if you have a book. Of Krishna are all transcendentally sweet like sugar candy. Although the tongue of one afflicted by the jaundice of avidya, ignorance, cannot taste anything sweet, it is wonderful that simply by carefully chanting these sweet names every day, a natural relish awakens within his tongue, and his disease is gradually destroyed at the root. Text 8. Tannama rupa charitani sukirtananu smicho kramena rasana manasini yojja tistam vrajeta nanuragi jananugami kalam nayeda kilamichupadesha saram. The essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time, 24 hours a day, in nicely chanting and remembering the Lord's divine name, transcendental form, qualities, and eternal pastimes, therefore gradually engaging one's tongue and mind. In this way, one should reside in Vraja, the Loka Vrindavana, and serve Krishna under the guidance of devotees. One should follow in the footsteps of the Lord's beloved devotees, who are deeply attached to his devotional service. This is a wonderful section, because here we're given Upadesha Sara, the essence of all advice. Good teacher tells you what's important and what's not so important. Just like in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, after Krishna says, of fishes I am the shark, of mountains I am Meru, he says, but what is the use of all this detailed knowledge? He says, this is not very important. Right? And here, Rupa Goswami is telling us, Upadesha Saram, this is the essence. Something we should all remember as teachers and preachers. Let people know what's important, what's not important. So this is what's going to be on the exam. Pay attention. This is what's going to get you out of here. Do you wonder, you know, what's the trick to Krishna consciousness? Must be central. So here's one of the times when the acharyas or Krishna himself is telling us this is the key. Here's the essence. Here's the thing that you have to know. We need to start off with a little story. It's a true story. And this is about, we won't say her actual name, though. We'll call her Sue. And she was a very expert hiker. She climbed mountains and hiked on some of the roughest trails in the world. And she was hiking a trail on one of the Hawaiian islands. And normally when you go out hiking, you should, number one, tell somebody where you're going, and number two, you should go with somebody. So she didn't do either of those. Even though she was so expert, sometimes when you're very expert, you become careless, isn't it? If you're really good at something, if you know you're not really good, then you're careful. You've got your cookbook there and you're following. But when you're really
whispered, you could, oh, I'll just remember. So she didn't tell anybody where she was going, and she went alone. And she's hiking, and, you know, everything's going great. And all of a sudden, she realizes that she's gotten off of the path. She's gotten in. She can still see the path. She looks back, and about 75 yards away, she can see where she diverged. Now, what would be the reasonable thing to do then? Go back. And she said later it would have taken her no more than 3 minutes to backtrack and get back on the path. But she thought, well, I don't want to take the time. It's already late. And anyway, I can see the main path up ahead. I'll rejoin it pretty soon. So she's going on and on. And 3 hours later, she realizes that she is lost. And now the sun is setting, and there's no way that she can backtrack, or she can even find her way back, and get to where she diverged and make it out of the park before the sun sets. Impossible. And she thinks, well, somehow I've got to go forward, but I don't know how to go forward. Now, I just don't know how to do it anymore. Maybe if I could get up high, I'd get a good vantage point, and then I'd be able to see where the path is, and I could climb back down and get on the path. That is a true story. So she sees this kind of high rock, and she thinks, I'll climb that. But it's, again, she was a very expert person. She thought, but it's pretty sheer. If I take my backpack with me, it'll be too heavy, and I won't be able to get up there. So her backpack, of course, had her food, her water, her extra warm clothes, a torch, and things like that. So she takes off her backpack, and she starts climbing this rock. And as she's climbing it, she realizes it's much more sheer than she had anticipated. It's practically a vertical wall, and she's like heading toe holds and barely climbing up this rock. And she realizes there's no way I'm going to be able to get down. So she hopes she can get down on the other side. And when she gets up at the top, indeed she can now see her way out, but the top is only about 3 feet wide. There's a sheer drop on the other side. So she's just like at this tiny little ledge with a sheer drop on both sides. And now she realizes that she can't get down, and now the sun is setting. And she realizes also now she can't go to sleep, because if she falls asleep, she'll fall off the side. So she's up there with no food, no water, you know, can't sleep. And, of course, nobody knows where she is. She has to stay up all night. She gets her cold at night. And in the morning, the sun's blazing. And at one point, she starts saying, my dear Lord, why did you put me in such a position? She realizes what we all come to realize at some point in our spiritual life. Krishna didn't put me here. I put myself here. Of course, you know, her family wondered why she didn't come home, and etc. And they sent out a search party, and she was eventually rescued by a helicopter. Nobody could even climb up the mountain to get her, but she was eventually rescued. But the point is that she realized that she was the one who got herself in that position. So Rupa Goswami starts off by telling us that in the material condition, the holy name doesn't taste sweet. That's not the fault of the holy name. That's our fault. We are the one who's gone off the path. We are the one who said, oh, let me go look at the material world. It's going to be so much prettier. I can always get back. And then we found that it wasn't so easy to get back. Right? We have to be rescued. We realize I can't get back on my own. I don't know how to get back. I'm stuck. Help. So this verse 7 and 8 are the process how to get back, how to get the help. How to get rescued by the helicopter. Right? So we start off here with Prabhupada, in this purport to text 7, I'm going to go through 7 and 8 at like an overview, and then we'll go back and talk about a few points. Okay, so Srila Prabhupada starts off with giving just a summary of basically all of Krishna consciousness in the first paragraph of this purport to text 7. He says that everything connected with Krishna is very sweet, but when you're diseased, you have bile. Just like sometimes when you're sick, your tongue gets coated. Find that? And you eat something that doesn't taste very good. And if you haven't brushed your teeth for a while, if you eat food, it doesn't taste very good because you've got all this coating on your teeth and your tongue. So it's not the fault of the food. Or if you're sick, I'm sure we've all had a bad cold, and food just doesn't taste very good. The same food that you normally enjoy, when you feel sick, you eat it and it's like you don't even want it. So we have this condition where food doesn't taste good anymore. But when you're sick, certain kinds of food may bring you back to health. Gradually. Right? Gradually the food first brings you back to health, and then you're able to taste the food. And Prabhupada says, such a recovery. He says, despite this disease, if one with great care and attention takes to Krishna consciousness. So this is a key over and over again. Great care and attention. Then he says, such a recovery of spiritual health is possible only by the regular cultivation of Krishna consciousness. If you have some disease and you take the medicine sporadically, without care, it may not get you well. I had a few months ago an infection in my eye. I went to the eye doctor and he said, generally we deal with this with surgery. And he showed me photographs of the surgery. I was like, whoa. Actually, he showed me photographs in a magazine for eye doctors. I said, is this how doctors learn how to perform surgery? They look at photographs in a magazine. So I wasn't feeling very encouraged about getting the surgery. He said, well, the option is you can take this heavy-duty antibiotic, this tetracycline, which is one of the worst antibiotics. So he gave me the prescription, but I had to do it with great care and attention. I had to take it twice a day, 12-hour intervals. I couldn't eat any food 2 hours before or 2 hours after, and I had to sit up for a half an hour after I took it. And I couldn't go out in the sun. It was a whole list of things I had to do. It made my life very, very complicated for 20 days. You know, just, okay, what is the right time? And have I eaten anything? And am I sitting up? And it was... But he said, if you do this, you take this medicine, you won't need the surgery. It will go away. And if you don't take the medicine, then you'll have to get surgery. So I said, okay, I'll take the medicine. And they tell you that if you mess up, then the disease may come back worse than you had it in the first place. You may get one of these resistant strains of bacteria. You know, and then you have to be put in the hospital and be on IVs and all these things. So my point is, even in normal medicine, sometimes it has to be great care and attention. Or I've traveled sometimes with Malati, who some of you may know is HIV positive, and she has to take all these heavy-duty medicines. She calls them toxic waste medicines. And also, she has to take them at very precise times, which is difficult when you travel through time zones and under very precise conditions, you know. So she's very, very careful. And because she's very careful, she's been able to go on and do her service for so many years, despite her disease. So with great care and attention. Now, if you don't realize you have a serious disease, why was I so careful with the tetracycline? Because I didn't want to get surgery. I was scared. So one has to be, as we were just studying in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita in our Bhagavad Gita sessions, how Prabhupada says that this material suffering is an impetus to make advancement. We should think, yeah, I really want to get out of here. You know, if you realize you're on a 3-foot ledge at the top of a sheer drop, you get very anxious to get rescued. So then one will do the process with great care and attention. But if we're thinking, no, I'm okay, I'm really enjoying the material world, it's all right, I can take my time. You know, but sporadic endeavor will not do it. Okay, then Srila Prabhupada describes at length what is the material disease. And after describing what is the material disease, he describes the cause of it, which has an individual cause of false ego, and a collective cause that we're living in a society that promotes materialism. Then after Srila Prabhupada describing the disease at length, then he talks about the cure. And he says that he describes the cure as mostly as chanting Hare Krishna, and he talks about three stages of chanting: offensive, clearing, and pure chanting. And then Srila Prabhupada goes into an explanation of the stages of Krishna consciousness from Adushrada to Prema. So he's saying, this is the problem, here's the problem, here's the solution, and here's how the solution is going to work. Now also, when the doctor gave me these horrible, they were really horrible medicines, he told me, this is what you can expect. He said, don't expect to see any result for at least a week. And then you should expect results like this and like this and like this. And if it doesn't work, come back and I'll work with you some more. So also, Prabhupada is telling us, this is, when you take the medicine, this is how you can expect it to progress. This is the symptoms you'll see as you're progressing. These are the stages that you will go through. Right? And then Srila Prabhupada, at the end, describes what will it be like when you're cured. What will be the result of taking the medicine? Right, then in text 8, here Rupa Goswami is telling us, and again I'm going to go through it quickly and then we'll go back in detail. Rupa Goswami is telling us the real essence of everything, the essence of all the step-by-step process described in text 7, the real essence is constant absorption of the mind. And this purport, in preparation for this class, I both listened to and read this purport, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 times. I decided it's one of the most wonderful purports anywhere in Prabhupada's books. And again, this is a purport to what Rupa Goswami is giving as the essence of advice. Saying the essence is Krishna consciousness. The essence is what you do with your mind. What's going on with your heart. I just got an email from one devotee who said, I was in love with this one devotee girl. We were going to get married. And then some other devotee came up to her and said, I love you. And she said, okay, I'll go with you instead. He said, and now she's fine and my heart is broken. He said, I can't hardly even chant. All I'm doing is thinking of her. Day and night, I'm thinking of her. That is how we're supposed to be with Krishna. So I haven't replied to him yet. But I'm going to say, if you just say, Krishna, I wish I felt this way about you. We all know how to have this total absorption of the mind in someone or something, Prabhupada says. Prabhupada lectures on Bhagavad Gita 7.1. He says, we all know how to have complete absorption of the mind with attachment. We've all experiences. He's saying, I can't sleep, I can't eat, I can hardly chant. What's he doing? He's burning in a fire of separation from his lovable object. That is how we should feel about Krishna. And also we should realize that we've done to Krishna exactly what this girl has done to him. How does Krishna feel? We've said, oh, Krishna, I think I'll fall in love with somebody else. Never mind that we have an eternal relationship. So that is the essence of the advice of text 8. Have that intense absorption of the mind and heart in Krishna. Prabhupada talks a lot about the mind, and he talks a lot about why what we think about and where our heart is matters. Then, Prabhupada is giving in very specifically in regard to this particular verse, how one goes through the process. So Prabhupada gave the Shraddha to Prema in text 7, and now here in text 8, he's talking about what's kind of the essence of that practice. To always think of Krishna, how do you do that? He goes through the stages of thinking of Krishna, from the neophyte all the way up to prema. And then he explains, what does Rupa Goswami mean by living in Vrindavan and taking shelter of an advanced devotee there? And Prabhupada explains it in terms of the neophyte and in terms of the advanced devotee. And then Srila Prabhupada did, remember what he did before where Prabhupada gave a purport pretty much twice? Once his purport and once an explanation of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's purport. You remember that earlier in Nectar Instruction? Well, here he's doing the same thing. Prabhupada's talking about the stages of devotion, not so much in terms of Shraddha to Prem, but in terms of absorption in Krishna. So same thing, how do you go through the process, but looking at it from a different angle? Just like I've mentioned this before, when a child is growing up, you can look at their maturation from different angles. We were discussing this in regard to the Kanista, Madhyama, and Uttama. So one can talk of our progression in terms of Shraddha to Prema, and one can also talk in terms of our progression from how are we absorbing our mind and heart in Krishna. And then explaining Bhaktisiddhanta's purports, he talks about, again, how that's done on the neophyte stage in a general way and how it's done on the advanced stage. This is a very deep section, and we could spend a lot of time on each part of the section. In your book you have, did we give them, do you guys have the charts? Do you guys have these charts in your book? Or did we include that? I think we might have included it in the end. Did we include those? Because I will be referring to those. Okay, going back to text 7, Prabhupada says, the normal condition is to remain a servant of the Lord. This healthy condition is lost when the living entity forgets Krishna due to being attracted by the external features of Krishna's Maya energy. In the material world, everyone is trying to become happy, and although the material attempts are baffled in every way, due to their nescience, they cannot understand their mistakes. People try to rectify one mistake by making another mistake. That's exactly what that lady did, wasn't it? She kept trying to fix her mistake by making another mistake. And she tried to fix that mistake by making another mistake. And that's exactly what the conditioned soul does. We separate from Krishna, and then instead of just going back to Krishna, we try to make some material adjustment that takes us further. And then instead of going back, we try to make another material adjustment, and pretty soon we end up on a 3-foot ledge. Right? And then what is the cause of that disease? Prabhupada said it's avidya, a misconception about one's spiritual identity provides the foundation for ahankara, or false ego, within the heart. So this is Prabhupada's talking about this divergent point. Where do we diverge from the path? Where I start thinking I'm the enjoyer instead of I'm the servant. Okay, now we're going to get to this Shraddha to Prema. First, Prabhupada describes it, again, looking at different angles of vision. We're going to look at three main ways of looking at our progress. Three stages of chanting, Shraddha to Prema, and degrees of absorption. Okay? These are like the signposts that tell us how close we're getting to our goal. So he talks about the offensive stage, the clearing stage, and the pure stage. Prabhupada says, when a neophyte takes to the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, he generally commits many offenses. There are 10 basic offenses, and if the devotee avoids these, he can glimpse the next stage, which is situated between offensive chanting and pure chanting. When one attains the pure stage, he is immediately liberated. This is called Bhava Maha Devagni Nirvapana. As soon as one is liberated from the blazing fire of material existence, he can relish the taste of transcendental life. So the taste Rupa Goswami is talking about occurs when one is on the stage of? I'll read it again. When a neophyte takes to the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, he generally commits many offenses. There are 10 basic offenses. And if the devotees avoid these, he can glimpse the next stage, which is situated between offensive chanting and pure chanting. Glimpse. So just like just a little while ago, you could glimpse the sun. Right? It wasn't fully risen. In fact, you didn't even see the sun. But things started to become light. You all learned in school about the cones and rods in the back of your eye and your retina. Right? And the rods can only see light and dark, and the cones can see colors. But the cones need more light. So therefore, before the sun's risen, everything just looks like black and white. You can't see the variety of colors. You can't see that the trees are green. They look black. But you can see the shape of the trees. Right? You can see something. You can't see everything, but you can see something. So this is a glimpse. Haridas Thakur talks about this, that this abhas, this is just a shadow of the name when you're free of the offenses. But still you can see. You're getting a glimpse. When one attains the pure stage, he is immediately liberated. So when the sun's fully risen, then you can actually see everything. This is called Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam. As soon as one is liberated from the blazing fire of material existence, he can relish the taste of transcendental life. So Rupa Goswami is talking here about relishing. When can one relish the holy name? And one is on what stage? Pure chanting. Now, of course, there's going to be some relishing that happens even with a neophyte, or else we wouldn't be here. We didn't join the Hare Krishna movement just because we were convinced intellectually. Yes? That's funny. I mean, that's really funny. Shall I tell you what this says? Okay. So first I was told today that I have to end exactly at 9. I was being given strict instructions to Lakini that I had to end precisely at 9 because Guru Krishna Swami is then becoming for Prasadam. And now I know that he's already following the new time. But I'm not going to go that late, don't worry. That would be an extra hour. Yeah. Which would mean right now it's 7:15 instead of 8:15. So first he wants me to stop speaking early, and now he wants me to talk longer. That reminds me when there was one devotee who Prabhupada said to him, "You're eating too much, you should eat less." And he said, "But Srila Prabhupada, you know, when I joined the movement, you told me to eat as much prasadam as possible." And Prabhupada said, "Did you believe me then?" Believe me then? Okay. I planned this. I'm going to end that. So one can really relish at the pure stage, but there's some relishing in the beginning because it's not that we just became intellectually convinced about Krishna consciousness. Intellectual conviction is not enough to move people to action. Keep that in mind also if you're trying to persuade someone of something. You can't persuade somebody of something just all in the head. There has to be some feeling. You know, you notice that advertisers mostly aim at the emotions. Mostly. But they make sure there's a mix. Or people trying to collect money. If you want people to dig in their pocket and open up their wallet, you cannot just appeal to the head. You have to also appeal to the heart. You have to appeal to the feelings. So we have to have some taste of Krishna consciousness, or we wouldn't have dedicated our life to Krishna consciousness. It's not that there's no taste or no relishing in the beginning. That's certainly there. And of course, sometimes Krishna, out of his kindness, gives somebody some, just like the movies, they show you a preview. What do they call that? Trailers? So Krishna also sometimes gives you a little preview, isn't it? A little glimpse. Or sometimes when you're on a journey, even if you're far away from your destination, sometimes you reach a point where you can sort of see it in the distance, and then it gets covered by the mountains and stuff again. So there's some relishing in the beginning. There's even some prema in the beginning. There's some feeling of affection for Krishna, even in the beginning. But as far as deep relishing of the holy name, one of my friends a few years ago called me up from a distant part of the world and said, "The holy name's really sweet. Actually, literally sweet." She said, "It's like I'm eating sugar candy when I'm chanting." She said, "Rupa Goswami wasn't giving a metaphor. It's literal." Or Prabhupada was asked once, "How do we know if we're chanting good quality rounds. And Prabhupada said, you have your beats, you know, you can count. No, Prabhupada, how do we know if we have good quality? He said, you don't know anything about quality. He said, you just chant. He said, quality is when you say, 16 rounds wasn't enough, I want to chant 16,000 rounds. He said, that's quality. Of course, sometimes devotees may say, okay, we're going to chant 64 rounds today. Or yesterday there was a group of devotees that wanted to see how many rounds they could chant from 5 in the morning till 6 at night. One of them got 144. So one may be doing that because one wants to be purified. One is tired of suffering in the material world. That's the mode of goodness. One may be doing it as a competition. Who can chant the more rounds? I had two kids who were doing that once. You know, they were each chanting, little kids, like 7 and 9 years old. I'm going to chant 16 rounds. I'm going to chant 16 rounds. I'm going to chant 64 rounds at a codicil. I'm going to chant 64 rounds at a codicil. And it was just all competition. And the younger one started cheating. And then the father said, hey, you know, no beads for you anymore. You can chant but not count. It's all just mode of passion and competition. But the pure chanting is when one is chanting not because there's a rule. I mean, and we can examine ourselves. You know, why do I pick up my bead bag and chant every day? I'm assuming all of us here pick up our bead bag and chant every day. So why do we do that? Probably because we were told to do that. Or we took a vow to do that. You know, and maybe we're even thinking, oh, when can I finish my round so I can get to all the things I have to do today? So that's not taste. There may be some taste. Obviously, there may be some taste. But that's not taste. Taste is I can't stop. Now, again, just like this devotee who wrote me, who can't stop thinking about this world. He can't stop. If you say to him, stop thinking about her, he just can't. Right? So that's taste. Then one just goes on chanting, chanting, chanting. There's that story, of course, of the great sage Krishnapriya, who when she'd even go to Bhagavatam class, her lips would be chanting Hare Krishna. And of course the speaker was very offended, from which he fell down from his spiritual life. He said, you should just be listening, not chanting. She says, I can't help it. She said, I'm hearing your class, but I just can't stop chanting Hare Krishna. Or devotees who are at this level, they've said to me things like, you know, I don't want to go to sleep at night. I just simply want to chant. Yeah, we see some perversion of this sort of thing in the world. Where somebody just, they just want to talk about their new grandchild, or they want to talk about their new business, or they want to, you know, they just can't stop talking about it. Nobody else may be interested, but that's all they want to think about. That's all they want to talk about. So this happens at the stage of, what stage? Pure chanting. Prabhupada says, the Krishna consciousness movement is especially meant for creating an atmosphere in which people can take to the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So you remember previously Prabhupada said the Krishna consciousness movement was meant to facilitate the six loving exchanges. Here he's saying it's meant to create an atmosphere. Look at this beautiful place. You've taken so much trouble to build this building. It was a lot of trouble, right? Still a lot of trouble. So why are you taking so much trouble? It would have been so much easier just to keep the little building down the street. Right? Wouldn't that have been easier? Life would have been so much simpler. So why are you taking so much trouble? To create an atmosphere in which people can take to the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So that we also need to be careful to do. So I lived in one temple once, which shall remain nameless, where japa time was a socializing time. That's when the temple authorities would walk around and talk to the devotees and take care of their business. And we once had a reporter come to the temple to write an article about the movement. And she walked up to me during japa and she said, is this your social time? And so we should be careful. The purpose of the movement, Prabhupada said, is to create an atmosphere that facilitates the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So then Prabhupada goes through the whole list of Shraddha to Prema, and for this we're going to turn to our charts. Now, you'll notice, if you read Prabhupada's books carefully, that Prabhupada talks about this process from Shraddha to Prema in many, many parts of his books. Sometimes he talks about it very obviously, and sometimes he talks about it indirectly. Now, these charts are compiled primarily from a book of Vishwanatha Chakra called Madhurya Kadambini, which I very strongly recommend to you. It's a very, very short book, something you can read in a short amount of time, very easy to understand, and again, it gives you the signposts. Just like if you're going to take a journey, if you're going to go from here, if you're going to drive from here to Wellington, so you have to know whether or not you're on the road, right? I don't know, but one time when I was in London, every time somebody drove me somewhere, we got lost. Things aren't signposted very well in London. The signs, I think America's a much superior country. Sorry for any of you Britishers. In America, we have all the signs at about the same height, in about the same place. But in London, they're all at different heights. Some of them are on the building, just almost near the street, which means they can be blocked by cars, and some of them are up in there, all different places. And it's hard, because when you're driving, you only have a second to see the sign, and you're driven past it, and if you have to take 10 seconds to even find the sign, or to speak of read it, by the time you found it, it's too late to read it. And then, in addition to that, the signs on the streets and the signs on the maps are not the same. Somehow the roads have several names, and when you stop and ask people, I'm looking for such and such road. Oh, you're on it. I'm on it, but the sign says that. And that happened over and over and over and over again. So it's hard to get where you want to get if you don't have proper signs. So the Shraddha to Prema is like signposts. Okay? I want to emphasize, I said this before, I'm going to say it again, I said it last time. I want to really emphasize that these stages are not little boxes. I know they're described here like little boxes, but they're not little boxes. We're each individuals. And one can be at a more advanced level in some areas and a less advanced level in other areas. Just like when a child goes from a child to an adult, they may grow up faster physically than emotionally, or they may grow up faster emotionally than physically. It happens all the time. When you're teaching kids in school, some of them are brilliant in science and useless in reading or whatever. It happens all the time that people don't make progress exactly at the same rate in all areas. So you'll find some devotees have a lot of realization and advancement about one part of Krishna consciousness and sort of medium on another part, and they're really struggling with something else. And we need to keep this in mind both when evaluating our own progress and also because last time we talked about that we have to discriminate about levels of devotees in terms of association, but also when associating with somebody else. Often what we'll do is we'll see someone who's generally advanced and they have some difficulty, and due to that one difficulty, we throw out all the good stuff. We say, okay, all their advancement is useless because they have this one difficulty. Or conversely, we may see someone who's very realized in one area, and on the basis of that one thing, we may think they're very advanced, even though they're struggling in general. Does that make sense? Okay. So we deal with ourselves as an individual and deal with others as an individual. I once asked Burjan a question about my own spiritual practice, and he looked at me and he said, in reference to the stages, he said, forget about all the stages. Keep that in mind also. They're signposts, they're guides, they're useful, they're helpful, but you can't apply them in some sort of a blind way. So then you may ask, well, why do we need to know them at all? Again, I've got to know where I'm going. And do you remember way back in first class about Niyamagraha when I was quoting from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bhaktiloka? And he talked about Niyamagraha. Does anybody remember what the talker said about that that's relevant to knowing what stage you're on? Nope. Oh, well. I didn't teach it very well. It would really help if I had visuals and stuff here. All right, let's get a mental visual. staircase. Everybody visualize a staircase? There's plenty of them around here, so just staircase, right? And the Thakur says that the rules of each stage are different. The do's and do not of each stage are different. If you try to do the rules of a higher stage, you won't progress. And if you remain chained, he uses the word chained, to the rules of a lower stage, you also won't progress. We have to know where we are because the practice is a little different. The practice is a little different. It's not exactly the same. So many of you know that I'm working on these children's reading books, right? So I've been working the last few days on one book about oxen with my son. He's doing the layout. And he has a lot of children. He has 7 children, which makes it really lovely because we can test the books on his children. So he printed out this book, and we tested it on his 3-year-old, almost 4-year-old, not 4-year-old, 4-year-old, 7-year-old, and 9-year-old. And the 7-year-old couldn't read one of the sentences because it was broken up over 3 lines. And so when she read the second line, she thought it was a new sentence, and it didn't make any sense. And we were talking about the fact that in very early books, we put 1 sentence per line. Right? Can you all picture this? The farmer gets food for you and me, full stop. The farmer gets food for the ox, full stop. And that's on 2 separate lines. But suppose you teach kids like that, which is very helpful when they're learning how to read. When a child is first learning how to read, it's really, really helpful. But what happens when you do that? I think we were talking about that. I think you and I, right? Everybody, were we talking about this? Was it you who was talking to me about it? I think so. One teacher was talking to me about this. Now, the problem is that children then think that you have to start a new line for each sentence. And when they're writing things, they have a hard time writing a continuous paragraph. And like his 7-year-old, she had a hard time reading a sentence that went, the farmer gets food for you and me and the oxen, was the way it went. She said, what is this, and me and the oxen? What does that mean? So the very device that helps the very beginning reader causes problems for the more advanced reader. The very thing that helped you. Putting 1 sentence on each line really helps you if you don't know how to read. But if you remain attached to that and think 1 sentence has to go on each line, you can't read a paragraph anymore. You have to give that up. You have to say, oh, now I'm progressing to another stage when a sentence can go over 2 lines. Does that make sense? So you have to know at what stage you're on. And if you're guiding people, you have to know what stage you're on. You have to know, do I teach them a new sentence has to start on a new line? Or do I teach them, no, a sentence can go from 1 line to the other? It's different. Was progress for one person a very simple, practical example to become a vegetarian? A vegetarian who doesn't offer their food. That would be a step down, I think, for everybody here, but that would be a real step up for some people, wouldn't it? I know some people that if they just gave up eating cows, I'd have a party. Some of my family members. Right? But if one of you said to me, well, I've decided I'm just going to not eat cows. So you have to know what level you're on. Therefore, this is important. So for who we associate with and to adjust our own practice of Krishna consciousness. Okay, let's take a look at the charts. So I'm not sure if you have it in exactly the same order. So the activity of Anushraddha is that you believe Krishna is God. You have a general faith. There's a God. There's a God, and maybe I can contact him. As I was just reading a lovely essay by Ravindra Prabhu, he said the question is not so much does God exist, but is he available? Because if he exists and he's not available, it doesn't really matter whether or not he exists. So this Anushraddha is God exists and he's available. I can have a relationship with him. Then Sadhu Sangha, I start associating with other people. If you're just in Anushraddha, it's pretty much theoretical. doing anything. You just have a general mentality of belief. And some religions teach that that's enough, right? I know at least two religions that teach pretty much that that's enough. Just believe. Just have some belief. One of these religions, they have this little thing you say, I believe that God is this person is this messenger. Okay, that's it. Now you're Muslim. Finish. Right? You just say that little creed. I believe. Right? But what did Jesus say? Faith without works is dead. Good, it's a good start. But then suddenly I start doing something about it, and I start associating with other believers. I start making my friends people who are not so materialistic. Because remember, what is the disease that causes us not to relish the name? Is this materialism? Thinking that I'm the control. So I start, you know, joining a support group, basically, for my disease. Other people who are trying to get well, and hopefully some people who are already well. Hopefully there's some doctors in the group as well. And then due to this association with other people who have this faith, my own faith becomes stronger, and pretty soon I decide to act on it. I said, I'm going to do something about it. I mean, I remember when I first visited the temple, I visited with a friend, and when I left, my friend said, so, what do you think? And I said, I agree with everything they said, but I didn't do anything about it. I didn't change anything in my life. It was just a belief. At Bhajana Kriya, Kriya means activity, you start to do something about your beliefs. You start to engage in the process of Krishna consciousness, and it's at this level that one takes initiation, that one makes a commitment. And Prabhupada compares initiation to either enrolling in a university or getting married. You know, we know some people that they've been in a relationship for a long time. And what would Prabhupada say to such people? When are you going to get married? Satchabhama told me when she and her husband joined the movement, they joined together. And Prabhupada initiated them. And at first he was saying things like, do you think you'd like to get married? And after a while is, when are you going to get married? And after a while is, this Sunday is a really auspicious day for a wedding, why don't you get married? You know, or we know people who've just been attending classes at a university forever. Do you know people like that? They're like 35 years old, they still don't have a degree. They attend a few classes here and a few classes there, and, you know, sit and take this course and take this course. And they probably have five times the number of courses that they need to graduate, but they've never enrolled. So initiation is you're making a commitment. And once, you know, when you make a commitment to Krishna, he makes a commitment back. You say, I'm serious. Prabhupada says that Krishna wants to see how painstaking you are. How serious are you? We always feel this way. If we're trying to help somebody with something, we want to see how serious they are. So at Bhajana Kriya, one takes initiation and one says, yes, I am going to take up this process very seriously. And you take shelter of a particular teacher. That's also required. We don't say that, you know, the Hare Krishna movement has the only bona fide teachers in the world. We probably accept Jesus Christ as a bona fide guru. We're not saying that. But you have to take shelter of a bona fide teacher. And then you have to follow that teacher. You can't go to Cambridge and say, well, they teach it like that over at Oxford, so why do I have to follow? No, you have to follow your teacher. And each teacher has their preference. They may use slightly different textbooks, they may teach things in a different order, whatever. And you follow your professor, as it's explained in the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu. The principle of accepting a guru is valid and the details are going to vary. And then different people are going to be given different instructions also. Right? In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we tell one person you worship the Ganga, one person you go serve your parents, the other ones you serve these devotees here. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is telling one person you marry, the other person you don't ever marry. So our teachers know how to engage us both our Diksha Guru and Shiksha Gurus. They know how to engage us according to our own proclivities. So that's Bhajana Kriya. We start taking up the process seriously, and as we take up the process seriously, then we start getting well. In the beginning, Adhishrata, it's like, yeah, you know, maybe I am sick. Maybe this place will cure me. And Bhajana Kriya, you're saying, okay, I'm going to start taking the medicine. How are we supposed to take the medicine? Remember? With great care and attention. Just like I would take those miserable antibiotics. According to a formula. And then you start getting better. That's called anartha nivritti. Artha means, what does artha mean? We say dharma, artha, karma, moksha. A desire. We often translate it as wealth. Some goal. Something you want. Anartha is something you don't want. Nivritti, you get rid of it. You get rid of the things you don't want. Of course, when the disease condition, you actually do want those things. Those are arthas. You want lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion. And gradually, by performing the process, you start saying, ooh, what is that? Right? When you come to Krishna consciousness, generally you think you're a nice person. You may even think you're a very spiritual person. You may even think you're a very, 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 very spiritual person. But as you perform the process, you start saying, I've left the path. Right? Like this lady thought, I'm a really expert hiker, and I'm close to the path. I'm doing just fine. And after a while, she realized, whoa, I'm lost. So as one performs this Bhajana Kriya, you realize, I'm really lost. And at a certain point, you realize, I'm really lost, and it's all my fault. Krishna didn't put me here at the top of this ledge. I did. I'm the one who's stuck here. And I'm stuck here by my own pride. And then one wants to get rid of the anarthas. And one starts getting a desire to get rid of the anarthas and a desire to come closer to Krishna. And Prabhupada often talks about the gross anarthas, which he talks about in this purport. That one loses interest in, you know, going to restaurants and eating things, as Prabhupada says here, with meat and onions. One loses interest in going to the movies. One loses interest, Prabhupada says, not only illicit sex, one loses interest in sex life in general. One starts losing interest in the things that are the core of materialistic life. And one starts getting out the gunk from the heart. Well, when that happens, one comes to the stage of nistha, or being fixed. Now, the stage of nistha is also Brahma-bhuta, where one becomes very joyful. It's at this stage that one gets that glimpse. Again, there may be some glimpses before then, but really at nistha, then one is in the stage where you see the black and white outlines of the trees. You start to awaken. You start to become enlightened. And what are the symptoms of being anistha, or we're talking about kanistha? You don't treat other people very nicely. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says you have sporadic endeavor. Sometimes you're like, yes, I'm going to chant concentrated rounds, and then I can't concentrate rounds for 3 days now and then become enlightened. I'm just going to space out today. I'm going to really read Prabhupada's books with attention. Oh, I did that for a while. And I'll just sit here and turn the pages and say I did like 2 hours of reading. You know, sporadic endeavor. And then inability to keep vows. Inability, first of all, to get rid of bad things. Okay, I'm not going to criticize anybody. Burjan, who talks about how he tried this at Kartik. And I tried it at Kartik, too. It was an interesting experiment. Okay, I'm not going to criticize anybody. You know, and 1 hour later, oh, yeah, that's about it. Yeah. Oops. Right? So you say, I'm going to give up some bad thing, and you end up doing it. Another symptom of being unfixed is you can't do the good things. First is you can't give up the bad things. Next, you can't do the good things. Okay, I'm going to learn 10 verses. No, you learn half a one. Or whatever, you know, I'm going to eat less. I'm going to eat healthy food. And you just can't keep it. And then it's becoming thinking, yes, I'm enjoying all these wonderful things that Bhakti's given me. I have this nice society and a nice place to live and this nice food, and everybody thinks I'm so spiritual, and I think I'll just enjoy that. That's like the demigod's mentality. I'll just enjoy serving Krishna in the material world. So these are all signs of not being fixed. Other signs is being distracted. Now I'm trying to chant, or I'm trying to read, or I'm trying to look at the deities, and I'm just thinking, you know, like this boy's thinking about this girl he's in love with. He's trying to chant Krishna's name. I don't know her name. Instead, he's thinking about her name. He's thinking of Krishna Dasi. Hare Krishna, 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 Krishna Dasi. So that's distraction. And just thinking it's not very important. Oh, it's not very important. Chanting with attention isn't so important. Reading carefully isn't so important. Going to kirtan isn't so important. I have so many other important things to do. And the worst is when you just actually fall asleep. Oh, I've got insomnia. Okay, let me get my bead bag out. That'll put me to sleep. I heard of the devotee must distribute a book like that. He's out on the street, and some guy said, oh, I'm not really very interested. And he said, what kind of things are you interested in? He said, well, I'm interested in getting rid of my insomnia. He said, oh, you got to read this book. It puts people to sleep every morning in our temple. You know? So that's another prime symptom of not being fixed. I haven't seen that too much in the kirtan, people falling asleep in the kirtan. I have seen it once or twice. People in the kirtan, I've also seen it twice with somebody giving a Bhagavatam class. When they actually closed their eyes, you thought they were meditating on the next verse or something. But that's pretty rare. That's pretty rare. But falling asleep during japa is not so rare. You know, I'll be japa time. Sometimes I wonder if that's why we turn the light slow or something. We never did that in the early days. Did we do that in the early days? Turn off the lights? No. I wonder if the person who invented it just, you know, wanted a little bit more peaceful time and kind of lean back against the wall. So anyway, those are all symptoms of not being fixed. And those are all symptoms of still having the anarjas in the heart. Thinking other things are more important, thinking Krishna consciousness is not important, right? Falling asleep, being distracted, sporadic endeavor, not being able to stick to the things we want to give up, not being able to stick to the things we want to take up, and just trying to enjoy the material facility. So if we have any of those symptoms, you might say, well, I'm not committing any offenses, I don't have any anarjas. But if you have those symptoms, then you do. Okay? It's like someone was talking the other day and saying, the doctors say I'm crazy, but I'm not crazy. And I'm thinking, well, you think there's some symptoms of being crazy. So if somebody says, you know, I'm not sick, I'm spiritual, but if those are the symptoms, then we must understand that we have these anarjas. Right, now, this is a little bit of a subtle point. It's a little difficult to understand, but it's worth taking the time to understand it, because this is one of the biggest questions that people ask in the Hare Krishna movement. People say, how can I be steady? Right, we'll have a time when we are really endeavoring with enthusiasm, patience, and confidence, and we're really giving our heart, and we get this incredible taste of Krishna consciousness, right? And you think, how can I keep it? Isn't that one of the biggest questions? Everywhere it goes, one of the top five questions. How can I had it there. It was there. I had it for 5 minutes, or I had it for half an hour, or I even had it for a whole day. Oh, a week, and now it's gone. How can I keep it? Why can't I keep it? Okay. So looking at this line between anistha bhajana kriya and nistha bhajana kriya. Okay, I'm going to give you a scientific analysis of why, until the anarjas are free, you can't keep it. Okay? You going to come with me on this? It's a little hard. As long as I have these anarthas, which I like, I have them because I like them. I have them because I want them. I think they're nice. I don't see them as anarthas. I've given this example so many times of the people with the dangerous pets. Right? Somebody keeps a python as a pet. Sometimes makes headlines in the newspaper. Man eaten by pet python. Devotee who had a dog who literally ripped off the face of his neighbor's daughter. It was also a devotee. And the doctors were able to put the face back on. The only thing that's left is she doesn't have a tear duct on that side. But he kept the dog. Kama Shrita, Krishna says, and Ahankara Shrita. We think there are shelters, we like them. Okay, if I'm going to keep lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion as my pets, and we're keeping them because we think they're going to get me something that I want. If I gave up my lust, well, then I wouldn't do this and this and this. And if I wouldn't do this and this and this, I wouldn't get any happiness. If I gave up my greed, I wouldn't want to work anymore. If I didn't work anymore, I wouldn't have money. If I didn't have money, then I wouldn't get anything I need. I have to have my greed. That's how we're thinking. But in order to have greed, lust, anger, envy, I must be under the modes of passion and ignorance. In order to think those things are nice, in order to keep them, I have to be in a state of illusion. I have to be. It's just like, in order for people to eat meat, they have to be in illusion. How can you eat meat if you think clearly? You just can't. It becomes impossible. You have to cover over your awareness of what you're doing. So in the same way, you have to have a covered consciousness in order to have lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion as my friends, as my artists, as my goals. So as long as I'm misidentifying that I'm the center, and as long as I'm thinking that material pleasure is pleasure, and in order to achieve material pleasure, I've got to have lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion. Without those things, it's true, you won't strive for material pleasure. It's true. If you didn't have any lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion, we would not make any endeavor to try to enjoy this world. Oh, then I wouldn't enjoy. You see? What happens? What would happen? I just suffer. Oh, that'd be terrible. So therefore, we have to be in illusion. And as long as we're in illusion, as long as we're covered by passion and ignorance, we cannot be steady. Impossible. Steadiness comes with truth, with knowledge, with seeing things as they are. Right? As Prabhupada says here. Oh, my thing fell off. Anyway, he says that we want to change the stage of Baba, that Maya doesn't disturb him. Oh, here it is. Although Maya may be present, it cannot disturb a devotee once he attains the Baba stage. This is because the devotee can see the real position of Maya. Well, it's easy to be steady if you see Maya for what it is. Prabhupada says in another place, one can see the naked form of material desires. But we don't want to see Maya for what it is. If we saw Maya for what it is, we wouldn't be interested in it. So we don't want to. It's sort of like if you go to someone watching a movie and you say, you know, look, it's just a bunch of lights on the screen and actors. It's not real. It's not really happening. It's just an illusion. If they really want to see the movie, what will they tell you to do? Go away. When someone's absorbed in a movie, you can only enjoy the movie if you think it's really happening. Right? Does this make sense to everybody? So that steadiness in Krishna consciousness, one has to be pretty much free. Nasta prayasya bhadvesha nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavata uttam sokya bhakti bhavati nashtaki. Nasta prayasya bhadvesha. You don't have to be completely free of passion in this, but pretty much. Pretty much. Then you can see things as they are, and then one can be steady. So as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati says, we're holding a tree and we're saying, please let me go, please let me go, please let me go, please let me go. The girl at the ledge who said, Lord, why did you put me here? So we are keeping ourselves in anartha nivritti. And keeping ourselves from becoming steady due to our attachments. And Srila Prabhupada says, until the stage of nista, it's a hard struggle with determination. So also, if we're experiencing Krishna consciousness as a hard struggle with determination, that means we have not yet attained the stage of nista. At which point, Prabhupada said, everything comes very easily. Then things start happening automatically and very easily. So we should try to get through this anartha nivritti stage as fast as possible. In the Bhagavatam it says two types of people enjoy. What are the two types of people that enjoy? Do you know? The ignorant fools and the liberated souls. So the problem is that once we start coming to Bhajan and Kriya, we're not ignorant fools anymore, are we? You ever tried to go back to material enjoyment after starting Krishna consciousness? It's hard. It's really hard. We might say in our propaganda, yeah, you can try Krishna consciousness. If you don't like it, you can always go back to being a materialist. But it's hard to go back to being a materialist. Do you ever talk to people who try to do that? They'll tell you it's hard. They'll say, I just keep thinking about Krishna. I don't want to anymore. I just keep thinking about him. One devotee told me, I left the temple. I decided I'm going to forget about this Krishna. Went and bought some ice cream, and then I was thinking, I should offer this ice cream. Why am I thinking about Krishna? You know, Krishna will just pop up somewhere. So we're not a gross fool anymore. But if we're not on the transcendental level, what does that mean? That means we're not having gross material illusory happiness, and nor are we having transcendental happiness. And Anandamaya Vyasat, we're happiness-seeking, like heat-seeking missiles. We're happiness-seeking entities. We want pleasure. How long can you stay without either illusory material pleasure or spiritual pleasure? How long can you even keep that up? Not very long. And this is one of the main reasons that people find it difficult to continue the strict practice of Krishna consciousness. They're not getting through the stage fast enough, and so they say, let me go for the material pleasure. It's easier. I know how to do that. At least I'll be getting something. Of course, as I say, they don't really get it. You can't really go back. Narada Muni says, once you've tasted Krishna consciousness, you can't help but remember that again and again and again. So it's not really going to work. Therefore, Prabhupada said, once you take up this process, you'll be ultimately dragged to success. After a while, it's like, this isn't working out very well. So how to go through this stage as fast as possible? The question. How to go through this stage as fast as possible? We'll talk about this a little bit with text 8. But here, want to get rid of your inertias. There's one place where Prabhupada said, if you don't want to clean the dust from your heart, if you want to keep things as they are, then you're not going to progress. Want to progress. Want to see yourself honestly. You don't have to tell anybody else what Krishna shows you in your heart. They already know anyway. Want to get rid of the inertias. Want to come closer to get this desire. We'll talk about this some more with text 8. Take it as an adventure. And also have some patience with the fact that if we're not Nista, we're not Nista. Okay? So if I'm not at the platform being fixed, there will be sporadic endeavor. There will be some inability to keep my determination. That's some of the symptoms of that stage. Don't give up just because there are some better symptoms. Do you understand? If I'm learning how to play tennis, well, one of the symptoms is I'm going to drop the ball. You don't say, well, I've dropped the ball a few times. I'm a useless tennis player. I'll never become a tennis player. Jesus. So if you see the sporadic endeavor and the inability to keep this and that determination, say, okay, those are symptoms that I'm not steady yet. Got to keep knowing. Don't become discouraged. Don't think the process doesn't work or I'm not really sincere. That's expected at this stage. Just like that doctor told me, he said, it might take 7 to 10 days before you see any progress. And I kept feeling the lump in my eye. Still there, still there, still there. I'll tell you what, now it's gone. He was right. He said, the first few days you may not see much progress. It's okay. All right, now, Nista, things start getting really exciting at Nista. Now, even at Nista, though, one's mind still wanders, and this will be important. We look at text 8. Even at Ruchi, one's mind still wanders to material things. But at Ruchi is when one starts to relish the chanting. So it's really at this point, at Nistan, especially at Ruchi, that one is chanting the pure name. Pure name means you realize that Krishna is the same as himself. It's not just an intellectual understanding. Oh yeah, Krishna's the same as his name. You experience that when you say Krishna, Krishna's there and you're with him and you're talking to him, that you're in his presence. I can imagine that's why people at the stage of Ruchi want to chant 16,000 rounds. They don't want to stop saying Krishna, saying Krishna, 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 Krishna. Because there he is. Now, Ruchi, one is attached to the service. One is attached to hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, decorating the deities. And you can see why such people want to become preachers. I mean, we may preach again because we're told you better preach.
Take my book back. Get out.
But someone on the stage of Ruchi, they're like, wow, I gotta tell everybody about this. Hey, wake up. The next stage in the Shakti is one isn't just attached to hearing and chanting, one is attached to Krishna. One really starts falling in love with Krishna. Then one no longer cares, I do this for Krishna, that for just as long as I can be with Krishna. And that's just like that boy who all he could think about was that boy. Exactly like that. Exactly like that. And in fact, the Goswamis pray, let me be attached to you, just like young boys and young girls are naturally attracted to each other. Just like that. So that is a Shakti. And in a Shakti, all the struggle to control the mind is over. So even at Nistan Ruchi, still the mind is sometimes wandering. One is chanting, one is seeing the deity, and all of a sudden you're thinking about Lord knows what. The bubblegum commercial you knew when you were six. But at a Shakti, it's just the opposite. If someone's talking about, oh, there's the economic summit going on and this war and that, all of a sudden you find yourself thinking about Krishna. And just like previously, like one devotee said, Prabhupada, sometimes we fall into Maya. And Prabhupada said, no, you're always in Maya. Sometimes you fall into Krishna. Right, so just like previously, one's chanting, one's worshiping the deity, and all of a sudden you're thinking about some total nonsense, and you don't even know how it happened. And sometimes, you know, you realize, oh my God, I haven't been listening to my rounds for the past hour, or a week, or a year. But what have I been doing? So in a Shakti, it's just the opposite. Like, how did I start thinking about Krishna? We weren't talking about Krishna. Who am I thinking about Krishna? So that is what happens at a Shakti. And at a Shakti, one gets a glimpse. And this can happen before that also. But one really gets a sense of one's relationship with Krishna. One is when we say one becomes attached to Krishna, that's with a particular feeling. One starts thinking, oh, Krishna's my friend. Oh, Krishna's my lady. Krishna's my lover. One starts feeling like that. Now again, those feelings may surface even at Nista to some extent. But at a Shakti, it becomes very clear. Oh, Krishna's my... I feel this way towards Krishna. And it's not just thinking, well, this is what I'm supposed to feel. It says in the books, this is the highest thing, and so that's what I'm going to feel. No, it's a natural feeling. Just like in our normal relationships, I have these kind of feelings towards people. Right? I have this feeling, well, this person's my friend, this person's my husband, my wife, this person's my child. Right? It arises, I don't have to analyze it. I don't have to look at little Madhava there and think, now, what kind of relationship do I have with him? It's spontaneous. Does that make sense? Because naturally I feel some parental affection towards him. So these things start arising in a Shakti, but they're not clear. And in Bhava, then one starts really feeling, Bhava means emotions, the emotions of love of God. And finally, at the stage of Prema, one knows everything about oneself. Bhaktivinoda Thakura talks about the 11 things about our identity, our name, our age, our colors, our residence. And one is absorbed in Krishna's pastimes. And we can look just briefly at a few of these charts, which I think you may find helpful. Okay, I'm not sure the right order. Okay, there's a very small chart here that shows at what level each of the anartas is removed. So the anartas come from past sins, those are like the lust, greed, envy. From past piety, that's our attraction to liberation and to enjoying in a wonderful way. From offenses, and they also come from being attached to the material fruits of bhakti. Right, now, when are these destroyed? And we find that there's the aparad is destroyed in a limited way at Vajrakriya. So this shows you, if you look at this, you can look at this a little later, but it shows you at each stage which of the anarthas are destroyed. And you notice that absolute destruction of the anarthas from offenses doesn't happen until prema. Although it's pervasive at nishtha. Something that's also very interesting is our concept, whether I think I'm the center or Krishna's the center. So I also have, it says consciousness, serving oneself, serving Krishna. Do you see where the chart where it says that? Okay, so at the Adushraddha, my consciousness of serving myself is absolute. And I just have a little spark of interest in serving Krishna. At Sadhu Sangha, it's still absolute, but now the spark of wanting to serve Krishna has gone from a spark to a trace. At Bhajanakriya, it's partial interest in serving Krishna. Then if you look at Nista and Ruchi, which is on the next page, you'll see that at Nista, my self-consciousness is almost full, but my consciousness to serve Krishna is pervasive. Then that becomes reversed at Ruchi. So we can say it about Nista, and Nista, I'm at about 40% interested in serving Krishna, like 60% interested in serving myself. Then at Ruchi, that reverses. And you see that prema, that my self-consciousness becomes absent and my consciousness of serving Krishna becomes absolute. And only in Bhava does my self-consciousness become a shadow. We're going to finish up by going to text 8. And we're going to look at the same process from a different perspective. From the perspective of how absorbed we are in Krishna. And this is not nearly as long of an explanation. For here, you can look at your chart, the map for text 8. And here you see the progressive stage of remembrance. You see it starts with Shravanadas, Varnadas, Smaranavasta, Samadhi, and Sampatti. This is another way of describing the progress. So we've so far looked at, in a previous class, we looked at Kanista, Majjhima, and Uttama, described different ways. This class so far, we've looked at offensive, clear, and pure chanting. Then we've looked at Shraddha Prema. Now we're looking at degrees of absorption. Why are degrees of absorption important? Prabhupada tells us that in the beginning of this book. He says, the Krishna consciousness movement is especially meant for training the mind to be always engaged in Krishna's business. He says this process of transmigration is very subtle. At the time of death, the mind and intelligence of a living entity create the subtle form of a certain type of body for the next life. If the mind suddenly thinks of something not very congenial and has to take the corresponding birth for the next life, pretty scary, right? If you die, you think, the horse, the horse! Now, how does this work? You know, some people can see ghosts, right? You know, what do they see when they see a ghost? If you see a ghost of Mrs. Smith, what does it look like? Mrs. Smith. Our subtle body is made up of something. It's made up of thoughts. And those thoughts have a form. Just like we're all wearing clothes and our clothes fit our body, right? You know, if we get a jumper or a chowder, it's not too big, it's not too small, isn't it? So guess what? This body is fitting on our subtle body. I get a particular kind of subtle body, and then I get a ghost. That's exactly what Prabhupada says here. He says, the mind and intelligence of a living entity create the subtle form of a certain type of body. The gross body fits on the subtle body. The gross body fits on the subtle body. What you think about, you get a corresponding body. You ever see this contest where you look most like a dog? They're meditating on a dog. They start looking like a dog. The Minister Pru has a wonderful essay on his website called The Krishna Approaching Body. What happens if our mind is absorbed in Krishna? Then what kind of body will we get? Prabhupada says a Krishna Approaching Body, a body that can approach Krishna. This is the Krishna consciousness movement. The point of everything we're doing is how much we absorb, how much our mind and our heart is absorbed in Krishna. And that determines where we go. If I'm here just doing things externally and my mind and heart is on, you know, Krishna Dasi, then guess what? You know, I may be a devotee, but I may be a little Krishna Dasi devotee. You understand? Very simple. So if I want to attain Krishna, I have to be absorbed in Krishna. Therefore, we can understand the process of advancement as to what degree am I absorbed in Krishna. Does that make sense? So I'm going to read something, which I hope will make all this very clear. This is from Sivaram Swami's book, Sudha Bhakti Chintamani. He said, and you can look at the chart when I'm reading it, so this will help you to follow what I'm saying. In the beginning, devotees hear philosophical truths about Krishna, descriptions of his form, pastimes and associates, and above all, they chant and hear Krishna's holy names. This stage is called Shravana Das. This is the beginner, this is the neophyte, they're hearing about Krishna. Fixed in service, devotees then develop a taste for Krishna's name and pastimes, chant without offense, and accept their identity as Krishna's eternal servants. The desire to follow the Raghatmika residence of Raja then awakens, and such devotees enter the stage of Varnadas. So this is acceptance, attachment. On the stage of Shraddha to Prema, what stage would this be, do you think? What are we looking at here for Varnadas? A Shakti Arujan. One really starts to have a taste. One starts to accept acceptance. It becomes part of you. So Shravana, you're just hearing, yes, I'm here, okay, I'm supposed to hear, I'm supposed to go to class, I'm supposed to hear the books, I have my time to hear the books, I'm going to turn around the tape, I'm supposed to listen to the tape. And often we really enjoy it. But Varna Das has become part of you. You can't live without it. You've accepted it. You want to chant 16,000 words. Genuine attachment to Krishna Katha and pure chanting enable spontaneous devotees to remember the Rajabhasis and their service to Krishna. Such fortunate devotees then enter the stage as Smarnavasta, which has five subdivisions. So Smarnavasta, then you're definitely at the stage of Ashakti. You're definitely at the stage of Ashakti. You've got deep attachment to Krishna and your attachment in one of the sidebars. Your attachment to Krishna started to mature in a particular way. First is so this has five subdivisions. First is the stage of recollection, in which the meditation of inexperienced devotees is easily broken by wandering thoughts and external distractions. So now that's also a symptomatic member of Nistanruchi. Remember we talked about? How Nistanruchi, even your mind goes? So this beginning stage of recollection of Smarnavasta cannot yet be fully the stage of Asakti. Because your mind is still wandering. You're trying to meditate. You're sort of, remember I was saying you can't put these stages in the boxes? You're trying to meditate. You have some attachment. You have some taste. But still the mind is wandering. With time, the stage of preliminary absorption, dharana, develops. So absorption, it becomes uninterrupted. The mind is free from distraction by the strength of the holy name. At this stage, remembrance proceeds unimpeded. So this is when one is firmly out of shakti. When the mind is naturally just going to Krishna, and there's no break in it. When such remembrance becomes an effortless flow, it is called constant. So before there's still some effort, but now it's just natural. It's just there all the time without any effort on one's part. The final stage of constant remembrance is trance, in which devotees freed of all bodily designation become fully absorbed in the object of their meditation. So that is samadhi. That is, one loses all interest in the world. One loses all sense of one's designations. One's fully absorbed in Krishna's name, form, quality, and pastimes. This stage of trance concludes Marnavasta, and its attainment signals the end of sadhana and all devotional activities performed in bondage. From here on, devotees are free from all touch of matter. So that means that samadhi must be the beginning of what stage? Bhava. Although bhava is not full perfection, it's not counted as sadhana bhakti. It's counted as the sadhya. So when one attains this samadhi, then one is in bhava. Achievement, apanadasa, takes place at the stage of ecstatic devotion as at the spiritual platform. At this stage, spiritual practices reach perfection. Devotees realize their spiritual form of siddha-sarup. Their spontaneous practices mature, and they factually know their eternal relationship with Krishna. The further stages of absorption ecstasy culminate in loving service, the ultimate goal of life. So our concluding words are the concluding words here of Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati. Because one may wonder, this essence of all advice, to go to Vrindavan, to meditate on Krishna, to take shelter under an advanced devotee, how does this apply in the different stages? He said, at first, if you're not really interested in Krishna consciousness, you just try to hear and chant under the guidance of great devotees. And after you get a taste, taste means the stage of ruchi. After you get a taste, then you should live in Vrindavan, constantly remembering Krishna's name. And we saw that at the stage of ruchi, you start to be able to constantly remember Krishna's name, especially as it moves into a shakti, under the direction and guidance of an expert devotee. And what happens at the final stage? So in the beginning, we're taking shelter of an advanced devotee in a general way. I'm taking shelter of a spiritual master. I'm taking shelter of the shastras. But at the advanced stages, one takes shelter. How? And here it says, at the advanced stage of Raghunuga Bhakti, one takes shelter of a specific associate of Krishna. And I think it's important to read this as Prabhupada first quoting from Bhakti Sananda. He says, in the Shanta Rasa, one can aspire to be like Krishna's cows, or the stick, or the flute in the hand of Krishna, or the flowers around Krishna's neck. In the Dasya Rasa, one follows in the footsteps of servants like Chitraka, Patraka, or Raktaka. In the friendly Sakya Rasa, one can become a friend like Baladeva, Sriyam, or Sudama. In Vatsalya, one can become like Nanda and Yasoda. And in Madhurya, one becomes like Srimati Radharani or her lady friends, such as Lalita, or her serving maids, Manjuris like Rupa and Ranti. One reason I think it's important to read this is that each of us have our eternal relationship with Krishna. This is explained very clearly by Prabhupada in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna becomes frightened upon seeing the universal form. And he was disturbed that his natural friendship with Krishna was so interfered with by the universal form. Prabhupada said, we all have our eternal relationship with Krishna. So sometimes people make propaganda that all of us should try to become on the conjugal rasa, and all of us should try to become manjuris. So here we see that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, Srila Prabhupada is saying, you may be at Shanta Rasa, which is, by the way, interesting, because in some places it says there's no Shanta Rasa in Goloka Vrindavan. That Shanta Rasa is only in Vaikuntha. But here Bhaktisiddhanta is characterizing Shanta Rasa as to be, you know, Krishna's flowers. And some devotees may want to be Krishna's flower. Some devotee wants to be Krishna's flower because Krishna has lots of flowers. And Krishna's stick. Yeah? Krishna's water cup. Krishna's ankle bells. So some devotee might think, I'd really like to be Krishna's turban ornament. And then they follow in the footsteps of Krishna's flute and Krishna's stick. And some people may want to be Krishna's servants. Getting Krishna dressed in the morning, bathing Krishna in the morning, bringing him his food, giving him a massage. And some people may want to be Krishna's friends. Some people may want to be Krishna's parents. You may say, well, Krishna only has one set of parents. No, all the older people in Vrindavan think of Krishna as their child. And in fact, you remember when Krishna expands himself as all the counterparts and literally becomes everybody's child. And then some people may want to become Krishna's lover. So that can be, of course, in Dwarka as Krishna's queens. I might not read any Krishna book about Krishna's queens. And Prabhupada says there, one is attracted to Krishna in conjugal love, can become Krishna's queen. Or Bhakti Sananda Saraswati says here, one can become, he says, like Radharani and her friends like Lalita. Or one can become, so even in conjugal love, there's three, there's Krishna's queens, there's Radharani and her associates, and then there's the Manjaris, three different kinds, three different flavors of devotees in conjugal love. And you can also examine these others, like in the parental vows, there's those who are Krishna's teachers, those who are Krishna's parents. In the friendship, there are those who are a little older than Krishna, where it's mixed with parental, there are those who are a little younger, where it's mixed with servitude. So there's all, even within these rasas, there's so many varieties. And in fact, each one of us has a very particular individual relationship with Krishna. There's no other living entity who has our particular relationship with Krishna. And so that is, of course, at the ultimate stage. So now we know how we got here at the top of the cliff and how we can get saved. And what are the stages of becoming saved? What are the stages of, again, coming to healthy life? So we can understand how to act according to the different stages and how to gauge our progress. So next week we'll conclude our study of the Upadeshamrita, and next week we literally are all going to take a bath in Radhakund. Literally, by the grace of Kalasambhara Prabhu, who brought back some Radhakund water and said that we should give everybody a bath in it next class. And we'll be looking at the better and best devotees and the better and best places. So if you're feeling really hungry, that's all your illusion, because it's really only 8:20 in the morning. We have a whole other hour for class. Any questions, comments? Yes, please. What Prabhupada said was, although Maya may be present, because Samadhi is Bhava, although Maya may be present, it cannot disturb the devotee once he attains the Bhava stage. This is because the devotee can see the real position of Maya. So Maya may be present, and will not disturb you. Maya means forgetfulness of Krishna, and forgetfulness of Krishna and Krishna consciousness stand side by side like light and shadow. Here Prabhupada is also talking about how important the mind is. Maya means I forget Krishna. Spiritual life means I'm conscious of Krishna. So may still be there. It will not be disturbing because you see it for what it is. So you're not grabbing it. So just like I can't eat cheddar cheese. If I eat cheddar cheese, I get very sick. Very fast, and for a very long time. So sometimes people offer me cheddar cheese. It may be around me. Other people may be eating it around me, but I don't eat it. Why don't I eat it? I know what it will do to me. So when I look at it, now I do remember how it tastes. It tastes very good. But when I see cheddar cheese, what do I see? Pain. I don't see, oh, there's this nice, melted, yellow, tasty cheese. I see pain. I no longer see it as a source of enjoyment for me. So I wanted Baba, and to some extent, all of us are like that. I mean, do you feel any attraction if you drive past a hamburger place? Are you fighting with your senses and your mind? No. Well, you know you see it for what it is. You see Maya for what it is, therefore you have no interest. The heart, Prabhupada says, heart struggle with determination until nista. So the struggle is until nista. Until nista, one is mostly fighting against Maya. Most of one's energy is going to fighting against Maya. After Nista, most of one's energy is going towards Krishna. But even at Nista and Ruchi, the mind wanders off when it's on the Dharma helicopter. Is that right? Yes. Well, because he's making it. Oh, she said, we're talking about the five mellows, but how does that go with Lord Chaitanya's giving the mellow of conjugal love? There's many answers to that question. One is that a person may sometimes move through the rasas. This is explained by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's also explained by Prabhupada in the Nectar Devotion, where he talks about that the residents of Vaikuntha may not have attained their full perfection, that one can go from Vaikuntha to Vrindavan. So sometimes a person may attain perfection and then still move up in that perfection. This story is shown with Gopa Kumar to some extent, although he always has a friendly relationship with Krishna. And also that they're making the higher rasas in Vrindavan in general known to the world. Formerly, most of the teachers were teaching just about Vaikuntha. And one can go from Vaikuntha to Goloka Vrindavan, like Gopa Kumar did. Of course, he went from Vaikuntha to earthly Vrindavan, to Goloka Vrindavan. And now we can go directly to Goloka Vrindavan. And there's another answer to that, and that is that in the ultimate sense, all feelings toward Krishna and all happiness in Krishna relates to Krishna's relationship with his consort. Like we just had the appearance day of Lord Ramachandra. So what is Hanuman's happiness? What makes Hanuman happy? To serve Lord Ram, what particularly makes him happy? Seeing Sita and Ram together. He wants to unite Sita and Ram. And he's in the Dasya Ras. He's not in the Madhurya Ras. But what his happiness is coming from is the Madhurya of Sita and Ram. And that's true for everybody. The essence of spiritual ecstasy, happiness, Ladini. Who's Ladini? Radharani. She's Ladini, Lakshmi, Sita. As soon as you talk about pleasing Krishna, as soon as you say, I'm going to give Krishna pleasure, immediately his pleasure potency is involved. I'm going to make Krishna happy. That means I'm going to do something to unite Krishna with his pleasure potency. And the living entities are experiencing that in a vicarious way. A simple analogy is you go to the wedding of a friend. Some of you renunciates may not relate to this, but maybe for some of you going to a friend's wedding is like going to a funeral, but for most people, you know, you go to the wedding of a friend, and even if you're just a servant at the wedding, you're getting happiness from the fact that this couple is having a conjugal relationship. That's why you're so happy at the wedding, even if all you're doing is making the cake. So although your mood is that of a servant, what are you getting the happiness from? So the origin of all spiritual happiness is like that, no matter what your particular rasa is. Mother Yasoda is always hoping that Krishna will marry Radharani. That's her secret desire. Even those who are opposed, you know, even Radharani's mother-in-law, she's bringing Radha and Krishna together. So everyone is focusing, you know, worshipping Lakshmi with Narayana. The Prabhupada distinguishes this, the difference between the devotees and the demons. Ravana wants to take Lakshmi, and the devotee wants to worship Lakshmi together with Narayana. And this is why when our spiritual love for Krishna becomes contaminated with false ego, what does it manifest as? Sex desire manifests as material sex desire. Material sex desire is the perversion of prema, which is wanting to see Krishna with his pleasure, potency. And that's one of the reasons that chanting Hare Krishna is the greatest service. What are you doing when you're chanting Hare Krishna? You bring together Hare and Krishna. You bring together Krishna with his pleasure potency, and that's why we feel so happy. And this is the difference between material life and spiritual life. Material life, I want to be the enjoyer, whether in a male form or a female form. I want to be the enjoyer. I want people to be attracted to me. I want to facilitate my sense of enjoyment. I want everyone to rejoice at my romantic affairs. And spiritual life is I'm rejoicing at Krishna's romantic affairs, as Lakshmi Narayan, as Sita Ram, as Radha Krishna. And I'm facilitating that. And in whatever rasa I'm facilitating that, the happiness I'm getting from that is that happiness. Does that make sense? So therefore, that sweetness, which just reading Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained this to Sanatana Goswami, that sweetness, that madhurya, pervades, especially Goloka Vrindavan, pervades everything in Goloka Vrindavan. Krishna's flowers are also facilitating the love between Radha and Krishna. Everything is facilitating that. And that is how the living entity is meant to enjoy. That's how we're designed to enjoy. We're like a little part of a machine, probably. It's like a little screw in a machine. And when you take the screw out of the machine, it can't function very well. You put it in the machine. So we're all part of that madhurya. No matter what our particular, how we want to play our role. Does that make sense? We have a festival. Everybody's part of the festival. Whether you're stringing the flower garlands, whether you're cleaning the floor, whether you're dressing the deities, whether you're giving the class, whether you're leading the kirtan, whether you're responding in the kirtan, you're all part of the same festival. Anything else? Is that all right for me? I'm sure there's more ways of answering that. Is there anything else? Okay, thank you. So next week we'll go to Govardhan in Radhakund. And so you may take your handouts with you this week if you want. And you can use them to help facilitate your study. And next week also, if you have any questions that come up on any part of the nectar instruction, we'd be happy to discuss them. I hope you found this helpful. We're trying to cover a lot in a short amount of time. And thank you for your patience. Hare Krishna.